I've got Sarah from Electrify Canberra here. Welcome, Sarah.
Hello.
Thanks for coming in. Now, can you tell us what Electrify Canberra is?
Of course, my great pleasure. Thank you for having me today. Electrify Canberra is a community group that's been running for about 3 years here in Canberra. And we're part of the broader Rewiring Australia network. And so we're one of 79 community groups around the country that talk to our neighbours, talk to people in the community about the benefits of electrification, residential electrification. In particular.
So it's not a government entity, it's a volunteer organisation?
No, that's right.
Okay, so it's been running for 3 years, so what's the mechanism that you've been using to sort of get out and talk to people about Electrify Canberra and the transition that we're trying to undergo here?
Well, Canberra is a small town. As you know, we're all fourth cousins here. So word of mouth is such a powerful tool here. And you mentioned, you know, explicitly we're not government. And that's really the power of transition groups such as ours, that we talk to neighbours. So we've got no vested interest in this. We're not business. We're not government. We're people who are somewhere on the journey to electrifying our homes, and we recognise how great it is and what the benefits are and how good for the community it is. So we talk to other people about, you know, how you do it, what are some of the challenges, what are some of the benefits. So we have stalls in front of IGAs. We've done a bit of door knocking. We do some letterboxing. If you have a look on our website, that gives a really good sense of different types of events we've run. We've run events about apartments. We've done a couple of events for ACT government where we'll have a stall and talk to people about electrification. And, you know, love coming to talk on the radio as well.
Excellent. Now, I saw something in the media this morning that said, I think Australia's up to 13%, or rooftop solar now provides 13% of our electrical energy, which is quite a significant amount. How does sort of Canberra fit into the broader, you know, sort of electrification journey, as it were? Are we sort of dragging the chain? Are we leading the field, or are we somewhere in the middle of the pack?
As I'm sure it will be no surprise, we're fantastic leaders in this space. And yeah, those figures are incredible. The rate of change in the electrification transition has been going much faster than people expected. There's a great podcast by Saul Griffith, who's a person who started Rewiring Australia. And he was talking about there being, out of 11 million households in the country, 4 million have solar. So we are such world leaders. We are, I mean, I think we're far and away ahead in terms of that energy transition towards electrification. So it's gone great guns. Canberra in particular, we went to 100% renewables a number of years ago, and we've had that fantastic sustainable home scheme, which is the loan scheme that gives until recently zero interest loans to put solar panels or get a battery or change your appliances over or contribute to an EV. So we've been far away ahead of other states, and we're a great example for others to follow.
Because it's more than just rooftop solar, isn't it? And I mean, there's more of a push now for the home battery, because there's been a little bit of, not so much resistance, but I suppose that there's been a cost barrier there for some time. So where are we on that journey now? Prices are coming down and capacity's going up. So can you give us a snapshot of where we're at with that and what sort of your experience has been with the take-up for that?
That take-up has been incredible. So it's exactly as you say. We were streets ahead, and this is nationally, streets ahead on solar. We've just gotten so many rooftops, and we love our solar and we see the benefits of it. EV slow and battery slow. Batteries are a real key. So we know that we produce more than enough energy in the day when the sun's shining. And the challenge is, how do we capture that energy for when we need it most at night, particularly in Canberra, where we really need our heating and our power at night. And so the battery take-up was low because there was that sense that that return on investment's going to take, you know, probably longer than people are prepared to put the money aside for. But now the rebate this year, I think, for that new scheme is 30% this year. I think it drops by 10% each year. But the take-up, we've completely oversubscribed on batteries now, and I think they'll be adding, if I understand right, to the value of the scheme. And that's fantastic. Like, at that rate, that really nails our storage requirements. So, again, I was just listening to this podcast, and I was saying by 2030, I think we need 20 gigawatts of power nationally, and home battery storage will get us to 27. And that's, you know, we've also got the big projects happening too. So it's a great new story.
Yeah, because, the basic economic laws of supply and demand are working here, sort of in our favour. Mm. Back in the early days of solar, the feed-in tariffs were really quite generous. I think they were somewhere up around about 60 cents a kilowatt hour, which is hard to imagine, and it's been dropping. And I think I got you know, the regular letter you get from ACCU telling you that the feed-in tariff is going to go down even more. So it's somewhere down around about 7 or 8 cents a kilowatt hour. So it's not, you know, that return that you were getting, you're not really getting anymore, and you'll get less because there's too much, you know, and the government or the ACCU is not going to pay for something that they don't need.
Yeah.
So hence the value of the battery, and you might as well save the power rather than export it back into the network.
You can see that's where the value is now. I mean, we had our battery on just over a year ago and looked and did it because we thought it's the, you know, it's a good thing to do. We thought, okay, probably be more than that 10-year, you know, return period. But it's interesting, what's been surprising is, you know, like everyone who gets solar and battery, you look at the app on your phone and you're watching your energy coming in and out. And actually our payback, it's been far more valuable than the figures were even predicting. So our payback period is dropping further than we thought it would. But that move to, it's true, that feed-in tariff did its job so beautifully, like it was such an incentive to put solar on. So it smashed out the solar on the roofs, and that's what we needed to get solar out there. But now we've got good penetration of solar, so the move now should be to using as much of that energy as we can ourselves. And that's where you get this great return on investment in the household. So the more you electrify your household, the better value you can get out of your solar.
So you've got a household battery on your house. So in practical terms, what are you running off that, and what does it take to drain it and have to go back onto the main supply?
It's our battery. So we've got family of four. We've got two. You know, I don't know. We're typical. We're fully electrified. We've got a relatively large house, so the heating is expensive in winter, and two EVs. So it is very quick and easy for us to drain our battery. And it's been trial and error. We're not energy experts by any sense. So it's trial and error to see where you get the best value from. And the app is great to show you, well, this is how much you're saving. And so we've tried to move how we fill our battery and when we use it. So try and ensure that we fill the battery in the day when power is extremely cheap, and use it for those shoulder periods where it's more expensive. It doesn't cover all our needs, and particularly in winter, we're probably, I mean, you know, for about three quarters of the year, we're just about very close to self-sufficient. For that winter period, it's probably maybe about 60%.
Yeah, because that's important for people to realise that, you know, because you do have to manage your energy usage different from when you're just doing the always available turn on the switch on the wall coming off the network. And it's the same if you've just got solar, you know, because it was, I know in our case, I used to always sort of put the dishwasher on at night when you went to bed, whereas now that doesn't make any sense. You really want that on in the middle of the day.
It's such a mindset shift for all of us, isn't it? And I think this is going to be the challenge going forward. So as we all electrify, certainly, you know, we have to think about whether we have, you know, enough substations in the system. But actually, it's amazing how much more efficient we can be in our use of our power with just some behavioural change. So that's right. You want to, as much as possible, if you can move your use of power to the day, that's where you get your best return on investment. And so you see this principle. There's a woman, Sarah Boddington at ANU, who's done some fantastic research on this, the whole how we use solar and our approach to it, and we've got the webinar on our website. And she talks about this idea of solarizers. So the first thing we do is put solar on our roof often because that's the thing that makes sense. It's tangible. We know we'll save money. But once we've got solar on the roof, that's before we just turned on a switch. We didn't really know when we use power. You get a bill once a quarter. You're not sure about your daily use. But once you've now, by having the means of control in your house, there's such great power autonomy as well. So I know exactly in the day how much power I'm generating. I know how much power I'm using. So I now have the information I need to make the decisions about when I use power. So as much as I can I charge my car in the day? Can I run the heating? And that leads to a whole range of other decisions, which is, well, I've made this investment for solar. How do I now get better return on this investment? So, okay, I'm using a lot of heat at night. My house, you know, houses are not really built to be terribly energy efficient in Australia. In Canberra, we've got lots of terrible examples. Can I make my house more energy efficient? Can I pop some insulation in? And that way I can jam my heating on in the day and maybe I don't need to run it so hard at night because I've got a better thermal envelope.
Yeah, yeah, because that is the key to, you know, you learn to make much better use of timers on appliances and so on, so that you're spreading the energy usage So you haven't got everything on at once, and you're using it, yeah. You know, either when you're generating the solar or when you're not making a lot of demands in other times. And,
yeah.
Of course, right in those really cold nights of winter, mm. you know, you do need to rely more on the, you know, on the main supply. Or I notice there are a number of people, and I think when you were speaking at the Tuggeranong Community Council, there are a few people were telling the same story that where they've got, you know, their old gas heating and they've got reverse cycle and they've got solar panels, they've got a whole smorgasbord of energy sources, and they're trying to sort of juggle when they're using different things. To maximise the efficiency but also minimise the cost, because energy has got very expensive you're buying it.
We'll see that for gas. Gas is just going to get more and more expensive. Mm. As we have less and less people in the network, they'll be expected to kind of sort of share those costs. And even, you know, for a household where if you maybe have one thing left on gas, so maybe you're keeping that gas heating or you're keeping your gas cooking because, you know, not sure about induction, you then also pay that monthly connection cost for gas, and that adds up. So even if you're not using gas, you still pay that cost.
Yeah.
So that's not a cost that will go down anytime soon. But if you have access to solar, if we can, you know, bring the power down, which, you know, there's a whole range of initiatives that will do that, then you're much better off in the long term.
Now, EVs, you mentioned you've got two, and that's probably becoming even more common in Canberra. I notice a house not far from me, there's two EVs parked in the driveway, and Canberra's probably ahead of the pack on that in terms of the take-up per capita. And we're seeing a lot more EVs coming in, a lot of new car models that are coming out that that we've never heard of before, coming out of China.
Yes.
And you think back a couple of years ago now where there was somebody, I'm not sure I can recall who, said, you know, you don't want an electric vehicle because it won't tow your boat.
Your weekend will be terrible.
Take your camping or whatever.
Oh, my weekends are awful now, Glenn.
and now you can see, you know, these sort of giant utes that are running on electric power.
The F-150 is electric.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and those big Chinese ones and so on that are just, they're not hybrid, they're full electric.
Oh, yeah.
So,
tow your boat, tow your caravan, tow your trailer.
Yeah, yeah, and our bus fleet is becoming increasingly electric. So, you know, it's not like electric cars are just like go-karts. You know, there are big vehicles that are running on electric.
BYDs, I mean, that's the hybrid, but they've got a decent, you know, you can do a lot of them on electric. They're a great transition vehicle for our tradies.
So do you want to talk a little bit about your personal experience with EVs and having made the transition from...
Yeah, absolutely. We started with a Nissan Leaf, and I've gone so quickly. It's probably about 4 or 5 years ago. And that's, we had a 300K range, so get to Sydney with about a 20-minute charge and get to the coast pretty happily. And my husband had thought, I'm really not sure about an EV because, you know, if you're doing your longer trips and it's kind of going to be a bit of a hassle and you're always stopping and charging. So we thought, okay, let's get an EV and then we'll just use it for our local trips, and then if we're going interstate, well, we'll hire a car or do something. But actually we found we have never had to do that. The charging infrastructure around the country is just getting better and better. Going back about 4 years, we did a trip down to Tassie. We had no problem. I mean, Tassie's got chargers everywhere. We had absolutely no problems. We wanted to stop every 2 hours anyway. It was nice to have a coffee. And I really, you just become... Once you drive one for a little while, having to go back and drive the petrol car, it's like, oh, what's that smell? That's awful. And they're really good cars. Once you've made, the price are coming down now. We're seeing more secondhand EVs in the market, so making them more accessible. And they're just a really high-performance vehicle. You don't have your kind of regular maintenance and service costs. So the minute you've made that upfront investment, you're saving money straight away. I mean, we spend thousands of dollars on petrol every year. The money just flies out the country to sort of overseas interests, whereas I can charge locally, I can have a coffee at the local shop, I can charge off my solar, so it becomes super cheap. And the one thing that everyone who has an EV will tell you is they're incredibly fun to drive. So I might have mentioned at the Tuggers Community Council, it's my, you know, I'm an older woman, I've got grey hair, I absolutely love getting to the lights, and just unless they've got an EV, I always win the drags.
Yeah.
So I mean, I always stop at 60. But
yes.
They're great fun to drive.
Yeah, well, we're still driving a petrol-driven car, but I've had calls to hire cars in recent times. I've had to go interstate, and they've ended up being hybrids and so on. And I know the first time I got in one, I thought, what do I do? What does this thing ready mean and all this kind of thing? But once you get into it and it gets going, they're very efficient.
Yeah.
And particularly, I find, if you're doing a lot of town driving, they're perfect for that because they're charging all the time.
Yeah.
Less of a benefit if you're out on the highway because they were running on petrol a lot more than
that's where
than
the
on electric.
The hybrids are challenging because, I mean, depending what it is, I mean, I think the BYD, the is it the Shark, the big Ute? They're great. Like I'd love to drive one of those. For the most part, sometimes hybrids, like they're a good transition vehicle, but they also have a bit of the worst of both. They're heavier because they have the battery, so when you're using petrol, you do use more petrol. The plug-in hybrids are good because you've got a bit more control about you can put more, you know, you can have it more run off the battery. But I think we're at the point now where the range is just getting so much better on EVs that transition's really getting closer. The other thing that I think is sort of interesting is people coming out of natural disasters, that one of the first things to shut down when you have a disaster is a petrol station. Mm. And we only, you know, if there's any, you know, geopolitically things are a bit crazy at the moment, our supply is pretty limited. So I just can't remember what the exact figure is, but if we were unable to receive any petrol imports into the country, I don't know, it's something like a week. We don't actually have that long that we can get by. But if we can continue to plug in our cars, like that's really great energy independence.
Yeah, so if you're in a house with solar panels and whatever, you're really made. And you're mainly doing, you know, urban driving.
Yeah.
An EV makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got a big choice in the range of sizes, from very small to very big.
Yeah.
So.
And you see, I mean, it's hard for the farmers, but even that's changing now. I think I saw some information coming out of New Zealand recently, where farmers were talking about the brilliant benefits for them of going to EVs, and now that supply and the range of cars is bigger, and just the cost, like you cannot beat that cost differential. You're off petrol, it's just a huge difference.
Now, you're out having stalls and talking to people all of the time, and I'm sure you're getting plenty of, that's all very well, but what's coming back at you? What's the resistance? What's the point where people are saying, I'm not convinced?
The number one, I mean, and I'm sure it'll come as no surprise to you or your listeners, Glenn, the number one barrier is upfront cost. Mm-hmm. So we have, I encourage your listeners to go to our website, which is electrifycanberra.org. We have a little survey on there. We've now had over 2,600 people around Canberra fill in our survey. We really encourage more people to do that. It's really great for us to know what people's challenges and, you know, where they see the opportunities are. But one thing that we've been doing since, and the reason that we kind of came together as a community group initially, was to advocate for this idea of a suburban residential pilot. It was something that we heard about on Senator Pocock's campaign. I did work on that first campaign. And Saul Griffith from Rewiring Australia came to have a chat. And so on the campaign was, you know what, we know that the benefits of electrification to homes are immense. It's immediately cheaper. You know, it reduces its downward pressure on inflation. Your home's more comfortable, it's better kind of better living, it's safer when you talk about gas cooking, moving to induction's much safer, and we reduce our emissions immediately. So, you know, we don't have to wait for kind of big transmission projects to happen. It's within our own control. And in fact, one of the things that Saul Griffith says is 20% of our national emissions come from decisions we make around our kitchen table, whether we, you know, switch our appliances, solar battery, etc. So we thought, well, that's a good idea. It's the upfront cost. We all know that. You know, most of us are hard-pressed for money. We're paying off mortgages that are much higher than we'd like to be if we're lucky enough to be able to own our home. Renters, obviously, there's huge challenges. So what we would love to see is a pilot where we work out how to manage the issue of upfront costs. Because if you can get some supported finance to do the things that you need to electrify your household, you'll benefit it. From day one, your bills drop immediately. And then over time, you know, you work out how we pay that money back. And so again, Rewiring Australia have got great information about, if you look at over 15 years, if you factor in your upfront cost and your ongoing energy costs, with electrification, you are far and away ahead when you've electrified your house. You're cheaper on every front with electrification than gas. And that's even including an EV where prices are now. So it's the cost. I mean, look, there's a whole range of other issues. You know, people in apartments will have, you know, that's a whole other discussion. Complex buildings will have challenges. Some people have orientations where you can't get solar. For other people, you know, maybe they've recently replaced a gas heater. So, you know, you wouldn't want to really just take out a perfectly good appliance and replace it with something new again. But upfront cost is absolutely the number one thing we hear all the time. So that's where people need some help.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things you really sort of glossed over there. That upfront cost, which is an issue for some people, not so much for others. That's fine. That business about, I think it was 20% of the emissions is based on decisions made by individuals.
Yeah.
So that argument, if everybody's not doing it, why should I do it? Mm. You know, it doesn't really hold because, you know, it's all made up of individual decisions that add up to hundreds of millions and eventually billions of billions of people, and the fact that not everybody has to do it the same way.
That's right.
Yeah, there are different ways of doing it, and it's not an all or nothing. You know?
No, we're all on a journey. I mean, people in our group are really committed. Our volunteers are absolutely committed to residential electrification. We're not all off gas. We're on the journey. So it's just about having, and I guess one of the things, the value that we believe we can provide is just information. So I might have a gas heater that's perfectly good now. My hot water might be on gas. That day when it stops working, like, you don't want a cold shower. You're probably going to ring your tradie, and the easiest thing to do is replace like for like. But then you're kind of locked into paying those regular gas charges again. So it's being prepared for that moment when you're ready to replace your next appliance. You know what you're going to do. You know where you need to go, and you don't have to wait and have cold showers.
Exactly. So I love that managing backwards from the future, working out when this is likely to expire, and being ready for it when it happens, rather than just muddling forward from now and just replacing like with like. Okay, you mentioned the magic word volunteers in there.
Oh, it is.
Do you want to mention a bit more about that?
You bet. So we are a volunteer-run organisation. We all volunteer our time, and we just actually, we've got a lovely, lovely community of people. They're younger and older, retired, still working, people who are just really interested in the cause. And we are always looking for more volunteers. We've got a range of different activities that people can undertake, and it depends on your interest and what you'd like to do. So there's a core of us that meet fortnightly, and we'll, come to stalls and do sort of lots of customer engagement, of householder engagement. But really, it's up to you what you like to do, and we really encourage people to kind of reach out to us so we can have the chat.
Yeah, and you're an apolitical organisation. I think you mentioned Senator Pocock there, but you're not a part of a political campaign at all.
Absolutely not. Everyone can have solar panels. It doesn't matter what your colours are. Mm. And we've met with all of our politicians, and we love meeting with all of them. We've had some hilarious chats with people all across the bench, from any party. And we've had actually really great support from all parties. If you can get to an issue, in these complicated times when things can get a bit divided, this is a topic that really brings people together. We all love our solar panels.
Yeah, excellent. All right, final comments?
Come join us. Electrify everything. The benefits are great for you, great for your kids. Look up our website, do our survey, and get in touch. We'd love to speak to you.
And that's electrifycanberra.org.
That's it.
That will do it. Okay, thanks, Sarah. I've been speaking with Sarah from Electrify Canberra, and there's plenty of things to think about in there. You can go to that website, or if you were interested and wanted to hear that conversation again, it'll be available on my program page on the Valley FM website later this afternoon, and on the interviews page in the next day or so.